if I own the token, I own the token. I don't own the tree. But yeah, I agree. My initial thought was just like, why? I understand the idea. I just don't understand why. Like, we can already buy carbon offsets, right?
What's up, y'all? My name is Alan Sheriff, aka Alan the Sheriff of All Things Innovative, and this is the ATS Podcast. Here on the ATS Podcast, we talk about all things science, technology, and psychology related, and it's my hope that I'm making the world a better place, one new episode at a time. Welcome back to our latest episode. Today, we're going to be talking about the tokenization of trees. And I know it sounds extremely confusing. No, this isn't about turning trees into tiny little tokens, you know, that you would probably see at Chuck E. Cheese's. No, it's none of that. We're gonna get into the meat of the matter in a second. But first, I kind of want to go ahead and introduce my guest that I had the opportunity of bringing on my podcast today. His name is Samir Lavingia. Correct. Lavingia. Awesome. All right. So I got the last name, pronounced it correctly. Awesome. He previously worked as a software engineer at Google. Now he's currently working as a software engineer at Twitter. I've seen this man in all of these articles talking about the tokenization of trees. And I thought, you know, what's keeping me from bringing him on the podcast to kind of discuss this a little, because even I'm a little confused about it. And I just really want to dig into it today and see how much information that we can get. So everybody, please join me in welcoming Samir Lavingia. How you doing today, man?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm happy to have you on. Shoot, at first, I didn't know if I'd be able to get you. I thought all the journalists would be jumping on top of you, man. But I was like, hey, you know what? Now's my chance to finally jump on this subject. And I'm glad I finally had the opportunity to, you know, get you on here. And so we can, you know, just kind of dive into it and see, you know, where we can go.
Definitely.
So, yeah, man. Yeah. So, look, just off the bat, I'm sure a lot of people are extremely confused about, you know, this tokenization of trees thing. I mean, even me, I'm just looking at the issue like, what is this? You know, what can people honestly take from it? And, you know, how in the world can we make it so that something like this in the future actually works for us if we do want it to work for us? You know what I mean? So I was wondering if you could, kind of quickly shed light on what exactly it is that the very first person whom you heard it from at that board meeting basically said about it. And, you know, what was kind of your initial reaction to it?
Yeah. So the first time I heard about it was, as you mentioned, at a community board meeting in New York. And at these meetings, participants, you know, they can talk about basically whatever they want, but they only get 2 minutes to speak. And so, you know, we're going to have 20 minutes and we're going to try to dive into it and try to understand what's going on.
Yeah.
But this individual only had 2 minutes to explain what this was. So it's really hard in those types of meetings to really get a grasp. But because I work in tech and I did a little bit more research, I was able to figure out what they were trying to convey. And I think what they were saying was basically the idea is that you would take each tree, basically make a unique identifier for each tree in the park. I think it was Greeley Square Park in New York. Basically mint that individual tree as an NFT. So let's say there are 500 trees. You would mint 500 NFTs representing those trees. And then because of that, they would be on the blockchain and people could, you know, buy and sell those NFTs freely. And that NFT would, when people want to verify like, who is the owner of this tree, they could go see that like this specific wallet owns this tree. And maybe you would publish that, you know, that wallet is your wallet. And people would know like, oh, Samir owns the 17th tree in Greeley Square Park. And I think the idea that they were also trying to convey was, I think there are two things. One is as the price of the NFT goes up, potentially the park could get a kickback from the dividends of the price increasing. So maybe on every trade, you would get some money back. Or by saying, I own this tree, I can claim the carbon offsets from that tree. Because, you know, getting to a zero carbon future is really important. And we can do a lot of it by reducing the consumption we use. But some of it is going to have to be done by creating, you know, clean energy and buying like carbon offset tokens or taxes, which they do in other countries, but they don't have a carbon tax in the US yet. And the idea would be that, you know, Google can say, we are zero emission, but really what that means is they are emitting a bunch, but then they buy carbon offsets for that amount that they're emitting. So they're like offsetting it by, you know, buying trees or investing in solar or whatever else.
See, that's that right off the bat. I'm actually really glad that you brought up the idea of trying to make it so that we're cleaning up the atmosphere and we have this idea of using carbon offsets so that, you know, people could make purchases in a particular area where they're able to, you know, offset the emissions in another area and stuff like that. And I'm glad you really brought that up because I'm thinking about whether or not the tokenization of trees is actually a good strategy to be using to kind of to basically work alongside the issue, you know, of climate change and stuff like that. Because I was thinking in the back of my head, okay, so the tokenization of trees, you have the public, which now has access to these trees, right? They have public ownership of these trees. And a lot of them are going to be shifted around and stuff like that in terms of ownership. But is that really helping in any type of way? And wouldn't that kind of make, you know, other entities, could be, you know, groups or other corporate entities come in and snatch up some of these trees and say, hey, you know, now we're using this for our own personal benefit? And would it even be possible for them to just clear away those trees and, you know, decide to just build upon those properties? So that was just some of the ideas that I was generating off the bat in my head. And I was like, the tokenization of trees, this is like, it sounds cool at the beginning, but over time in your head, you begin to realize, okay, maybe this might be a little dangerous. So, I mean, yeah. I don't know if you wanted to offer some of your thoughts on that, because those were just some of the...
I think the idea is that because you don't actually own the tree, you own like this digital representation that says you own the tree. There's no real concern about, you know, the corporation coming in and breaking down all these trees, because they don't... If I own the token, I own the token. I don't own the tree. But yeah, I agree. My initial thought was just like, why? I understand the idea. I just don't understand why. Like, we can already buy carbon offsets, right? Like, if I'm going on a flight and I feel really bad about the emissions that I'm causing by flying from, let's say, New York to Maryland, which is a short flight, I should just take a train. But assuming I fly, you know, I can buy carbon offsets, which would plant trees elsewhere. There's just something about this need to show ownership that I don't really understand. Like, if you want to just do it to be good for the environment, there are plenty of other ways to do that. And I think the other thing with climate is it's such a complicated question, because let's say I buy the tree, right? And then I sell it to you, right? To do this transaction, the blockchain, at least right now, needs to basically spend a bunch of resources to, you know, I won't go into how blockchains work, but basically to mint new blocks. And that, you know, it's like a distributed virtual machine that basically says, okay, Samir is selling this NFT to Alwyn. Now Alwyn owns it. But that costs energy and it costs time and it costs computing resources. Yeah. And right now, a lot of the mining rigs that are basically the virtual machines that do these transfers are running on fossil fuels. So it's kind of ironic that we're gonna sell you this tree or this NFT on the blockchain, and for that transaction to happen, we're gonna have to burn a bunch of coal, at least for now, until, you know, we move to a fully renewable future, or maybe we move away from these algorithms that waste a lot of energy.
Yeah, man. I mean, just thinking even about what you're saying right now, right? And I'm glad that you offered that clarity, that it's not that people actually own the actual resource in reality. They just own the token. And it's even hard for me trying to wrap my head around it right now, right? Is that they own a token that's kind of associated with that digital energy entity. Right. So it's kind of like, this is just a digital representation, but you don't actually own it. So you have people who say that they have this digital representation, they own it, and then they kind of trade it around in a way where a city, government, or whoever it is, you know, is basically taxing this digital representation or what it is, correct? They're kind of taking a piece of that, like a percentage, as it gets traded around, and they kind of help this kind of helps the environment or the community in some type of way. But like you basically said, these transactions are all all of these transactions are happening at the expense of the environment, right? Because they're still backed by these fossil fuels and, you know, they're basically backed by all these fossil fuels. And so in the back of my head, like, is this really useful? It's kind of crazy off the top of my head, but I'm trying to figure out whether or not something like this would be really useful if fossil fuels weren't a factor. Did he highlight any benefits that could potentially come from this if that was the case, or did he just completely leave that out and he was just kind of obsessed with, you know, the idea of, you know, these trees being on the blockchain and stuff like that? Or were there at least any benefits that you could possibly see from it?
Yeah, I think it's just when you have 2 minutes, it's so hard to highlight any benefits, especially because it's not a back and forth. It's more of just like I comment and then you listen type of thing at these community board meetings. If we are in a fully renewable future where it does not matter where, like, how many VM hours you're spending to move these tokens around, I'm trying to think of a benefit. Can't think of any off the top of my head. Maybe there is some, I mean, yeah, maybe one benefit is like if you're buying carbon offsets, it's as a corporation, it's quite easy because you can buy, you know, like bundles of hundreds or thousands of trees. And maybe this will make it easier for individuals to buy individual trees. But the thing that I still fail to understand is that makes sense for the initial transaction. So let's say I want to pay to have 1,000 trees planted in Indonesia. That makes sense to me. And I could understand why I would want to pay for that. I would understand why I want to get some sort of token that says I own those trees, just, I don't know, for my own benefit. But the follow-on transactions don't really make any sense to me. Like, I'm selling that token to you. What do you get out of it? What do I get out of it? What does Indonesia or the farmers get out of it? Those follow-on transactions, I don't really see helping anyone.
Yeah, I mean, the way... And correct me if I'm wrong, these tokens are basically very similar to NFTs in a way, right? Because, again, like we were saying before, it's a digital representation, and that these tokens basically represent these trees in real life. And based off the example you were using, were you saying that if individuals purchase these tokens, they would actually own the physical they would own that thing that's physical in real life?
I think what I was trying to say is that they would own the carbon offsets from that tree. So like they wouldn't own the tree itself, but they would be paying to plant it, and then they would be getting the benefit from it. So like the carbon offset, because on the blockchain it says that they own, let's say, 5 trees. So they would get the equivalent of like the carbon offset from 5 of the trees.
Do you think that carbon offsets is... Do you think that it's really useful? Do you think it's helpful? Or do you think it's just something that we're just doing at this point to kind of help cover up, you know, all the damage that's being done to the environment?
Yeah, I think a lot of the movement around carbon offsets are very greenwashy. Like, it definitely feels like when someone wants to just, you know, not feel bad about burning a bunch of fossil fuels, this is how they justify it. So I, in that sense, I am not sure if carbon offsets are the best thing. I think there are countries that do it a lot better. So for example, what they do is, let's say, I'm going to pick on Google again. Let's say Google in France is burning 200 tons of CO2, or like they're emitting 200 tons of greenhouse gases. What the country could do is say, okay, but you have to buy carbon offsets for that 200 tons. And right now, 1 ton of offset costs $1. But what you could do is you can keep ratcheting up the price of the carbon offset and make it less and less feasible for Google to just pay it off. So they do eventually have to reduce their emissions. And in that way, it is useful because it gives companies and corporations and whoever else time to adjust to this new reality. So let's say you have 10 years to go to net zero. Having carbon offsets where the price keeps increasing would force companies to get off of emissions. And I think that is what other countries have been doing. I would need to verify, but in that sense, I think carbon offsets can be useful. It's not a good, like, we shouldn't have them in 20 years, but between now and 20 years from now, they can be useful in driving down emissions.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I have this conversation all the time with friends is whether, you know, carbon offsets are just an excuse or whether or not they're something that can, you know, legitimately use to help combat the climate crisis. So it's just one of those things where I tend to think about a lot. And I'm saying to myself, well, maybe if we're trying to find a compromise, you know, maybe if we're trying to currently work with the corporations today as we see them and, you know, the damage that they're doing to the environment, this is our this is kind of like a middle ground that we can all work with. But at the exact same time, if the issue is just that we're pumping carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, how about we focus on trying to get you to stop doing that as much, you know, find solutions around that so that we can actually solve the real issue and stuff like that. So that's just something I think about a lot. It drives me crazy. Did you hear about how they're going to be tokenizing trees in China? And I just wanted to see how you felt about that. Just the fact that the entirety of the country was going to do it.
Yeah, I read at least one article about it. And I think the headline was quite sensational. At least the Medium post that I read about it was that China wants to be carbon neutral by 2060. And that China also, their leader, Xi Jinping, does want to be a leader in like blockchain technologies. And I think what they did is they put those two together and said, China's going to tokenize a bunch of trees. But there's actually no indication at all that China is thinking about doing this or wants to do it.
Okay.
It was just like a sensationalized article. I think the author works for a group that is trying to push blockchain technologies to solve the climate crisis. So it's probably just an opportunistic article that was written.
Got you. Yeah, I saw it right off the bat and I was like, there's just no way this is real. There's just no way they would take all their trees and kind of make it. I mean, I figured even if they did, it probably wouldn't even be to help combat the climate crisis. It would probably just be another way of making money, you know, making additional revenue. Because, you know, with everything going on and, you know, the rise of I know that they're having somewhat of a housing crisis over there, or I think it's a rental property crisis, however you want to specifically describe it. But, you know, with some issues going on and stuff like that, this would be another way to bring in some money. So I thought, okay, if they're doing this, then this is the only possible reason why they could be doing this. But at the exact same time, I'm like, there's just no way they would give that much access, you know, to people in general and stuff like that. So, yeah, no, I just wanted to get some of your thoughts on that. I mean, what are your thoughts? What do you think? What do you think are some of the best solutions right now that we should be focusing on in terms of combating climate change, if not the tokenization of trees?
I think the main thing is we need to start just reducing our emissions. So, for example, the thing I love, I know people like to dunk on recycling because it's not super great for the environment either, but the three R's for that are always reduce, reuse, and recycle. And recycling is the last option. Ideally, we would reduce. So for emissions and climate change, I think what we have to do is we have to reduce our CO2 emissions. And the way that we can do that most efficiently, at least in the US, because that's where I am, is if you look at emissions by geographical area, major metropolitan areas like New York or San Francisco or Chicago actually have some of the lowest emissions because people are close together. They don't drive, which is a huge emitter. When you're doing deliveries, you get economies of scale. Energy supply is much easier because you don't need to spread out energy among, you know, suburbs or exurbs that spread super far apart. So I think one thing we could do is not, you know, I don't think we should tell people where to live, but I think we should give more people the opportunity to live in cities if they want to. And the way that the rents are going in New York shows that people really do want to live in New York. And we just are in a severe housing crisis and a housing shortage, both in New York and San Francisco and these other major cities, which is causing the rent to go up like crazy. So if we can build a lot more to match the demand for how many people want to live in New York or San Francisco, we can have more people live in these cities where they would emit less, and we could reduce emissions a lot. The other main benefit of that is when you have people in these dense areas, you don't have to rely as much on cars or even planes. So the Eastern Seaboard has quite a few major cities, and you can take the Amtrak between them pretty easily. And right now it's not fully electrified, but once it's electrified, that's carbon-free travel. And right now people are flying these really short distances in the US for no reason. So I think investing a lot in public transportation, both between cities and within cities, is going to be very important for climate change.
Yeah, definitely. I've always been under the impression that there's nothing necessarily wrong with living in a city as long as we're able to build sustainable lifestyles around it. You know, there can be a lot of emissions coming from it, but at the end of the day, as long as we're kind of building a system that's setting people up so that they don't emit as much as they usually do when cities aren't invested in renewable energy, and that kind of makes things a whole lot easier along the process, in my opinion. So
yeah, I've never really had even without like renewable energy, people in cities like New York emit 3 times less than people who live elsewhere in the US. So even if we change nothing else, but we make it possible for people to live in New York or these other cities, we would be causing much less emissions per capita.
Yeah, you know what's insane? I didn't even know that. it sounds insane right off the bat when you say it, because it's like, oh, you know, it's just cars everywhere. And even though there are people that don't drive as much, there's still, there's still a whole bunch of traffic because everybody knows how hard it is to drive in New York and stuff. So it's, yeah, man, off the bat, it's insane hearing something like that.
In New York, less than 50% of households have cars. And in Manhattan, I believe it's less than 80% of households have cars. So if you don't have a car, you know, you can't drive it. So how are those 50%, how are those 80% of people getting around? They're walking, they're biking, they're taking the subway, they're taking the bus. And those are all just way lower emissions per person than having a car.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Hey, where can people find you?
Yeah, so I'm mostly on Twitter. My username is LavingiaSA, so LavingiaSA. I tweet a lot about urban planning, housing, transportation, all that kind of stuff. So if you want to hear more about that kind of stuff in New York specifically, give me a follow.
Awesome. Got you. Definitely, man. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today to, you know, give us your feedback and, you know, talk a lot more about this subject, because I know it was a really confusing one for me. Shoot, I'm still trying to wrap my head around it as well. But thank you so much for coming on, bringing clarity to the subject. Hopefully I can have you back on and discuss some of those subjects you just said as well. And yeah, man, we'll definitely keep in touch. This was great. Thank you.
Likewise. Have a great day.